Hello, greetings and salutations. A warm welcome to listeners of this very first episode of Quantum Conversations, where we wax lexical and occasionally may get lyrical on what we hope will be engaging and dynamic dialogues on a broad range of topics. So grab your scuba gear, because we're going to do deep dives and examine areas within these topics that are sometimes overlooked, perhaps not considered, conveniently omitted, or intentionally redacted. We like to ask the whys, the hows, and everything in between, or as much as we realistically can within the space of an episode, in an attempt to broaden our own spectrum of ideas and understanding. As a core part of our ethos is an openness to engage in dialogue, even if it pushes against concepts or beliefs that one has long held on to. In doing so, we can re-examine or revise our perceptions and understanding of ourselves, as well as the world around us. Besides, changing your mind about things can sometimes be a really good thing. At the helm of this conversational journey, I'm the show's creator, writer, and host, as well as your questioner-in-chief, Nyusha. And with me is my technical guru, my sound editing wizard, my co-questioner-in-chief, Paul. Paul is also the talented musician behind our lovely intro and outro music. Hello, Paul.
Hello, Nyusha. Thanks for those kind words. So good to be here with you today.
Well, thank you so much for joining. It's great having you. How are things on your end?
Things are well. Thank you. Thank you. I'm looking forward to our talk here.
Me too. Thank you. Well, today's very first Quantum Conversation is on the topic of burnout. So why burnout? Well, it's something that I've personally experienced, and I gather many of you out there have as well. Paul, what about you? Any experience with burnout?
I certainly have dealt with burnout, maybe not to the level of some others, but I think it would be hard for most people to avoid in our current society. I've worked as a photographer, camera operator, and an editor. While I love working in these creative fields, the reality is that to make a living, you often have to take quite a few jobs that are not necessarily what you dreamed of, and maybe not fulfilling your creative or artistic sides. Most of my week is also in an office, taking care of business, and not behind a camera. So needless to say, I haven't been immune from burnout myself.
I can imagine. And I can also imagine that in your line of work and working maybe freelance or independently, that there's a lot of competition, which can also, you know, impact or create burnout.
For sure. There are definitely pros and cons to it.
Yeah, well, I would say that for me, the culmination of my burnout led me to resign from my job. I was depressed, demoralized, and I had no energy to engage in more positive endeavors in my personal life. And I'm sure for many of you, these feelings may seem familiar. And as we'll soon find out, they do correlate to what studies often cite as symptoms of burnout. But because I couldn't continue in this state, I knew that I needed to make a radical shift. For me, this meant not only resigning from my job, but embracing the not knowing of what came next. Was I taking a bit of a gamble? Yes. Am I in a bit of a precarious situation? Again, yes. But you know what? I've come to learn that I'm not alone in making this type of decision, one where my well-being needed to come first. So, as I began this, let's just call it a personal sabbatical, still knee-deep in burnout, I thought it would be worthwhile to research a bit more about this thing that I was going through. Who knows? I could even find a local burnout support group. But as it happened, the latter was not available. And similarly, my online findings left me feeling rather unsatisfied, as if some key elements were missing. So I thought, is this deliberate? Perhaps it's a lapse in perspective, a kind of myopic approach to a very real and widely felt occurrence. Burnout certainly has been a hot topic in the past few years, and it might seem like a more recent phenomenon given the pandemic, all of the sort of socio-political and global economic machinations that we're experiencing, but it actually goes back to nearly 50 years ago. The term burnout was coined in 1974 by psychologist Dr. Herbert Freudenberger to describe a state of chronic exhaustion and stress. I'll hazard a guess that if burnout was widely surfacing amongst populations in the late 60s and in the early 70s, then in the decades following, there has certainly not been any meaningful or lasting economic or sociopolitical will to mitigate and address this properly. My other thought was that if Freudenberger came up with this term back in 74, and assuming this came after years of studies, it could also imply that burnout may go well back to the rise of industrial automation, and perhaps even further than that. On a side note, most of us have come to realize that in terms of economic and financial fairness, we're in a far from fair system. You don't need to be an economic expert to know that corporate behemoths and a small handful of multi-billionaires seem to be getting bigger and richer, often openly colluding with governments and big financial institutions to ensure their sway and control over both the public and private sectors. It's also worth noting that these very ultra-wealthy individuals make their money through many non-profit organizations and so-called philanthropies, all whilst exerting an ever-expansive power grab, including influencing or maybe coercing sovereign nations to change their laws, or making it so that these very non-profit organizations can, at will, supersede those laws. And speaking of billionaires, according to a 2020 Oxfam study, the world's 2,153 billionaires have more wealth than the 4.6 billion people who make up 60% of the planet's population. And according to yet another Oxfam brief in May of 2022, 573 people became new billionaires during the pandemic at the rate of one every 30 hours. And that by the end of 2022, Oxfam had anticipated that 263 million more people will crash into extreme poverty at a rate of a million people every 33 hours. So how is that connected with burnout, you might ask? Well, when there's a combination of economic depression or recession for us, the populace, together with bleak and uninspiring job markets, and with millions of people just generally fed up with the current work and political systems, it doesn't bode well, does it? And as many recent international publications have shown, we're not just seeing job cuts and rising unemployment, but also mass resignations with burnouts at the core of this. Then we have things like hyper-consumerism, our society's constant fixation with work productivity, and this general information overload, much of which feels like useless noise and distraction to manufacture consent, to drive fear and division, and as some very astute authors, whistleblowers, and independent investigative minds have shown, are just a means to ultimately try to subjugate and control people. All of these things may not be consciously at the forefront of our minds, but they inevitably impact us, our material reality, and how we feel personally and professionally. Neoliberal economic policies have managed to engender the least efficient and least balanced life-work conditions. With that in mind, it's not hard to see why burnout has subsequently become so prevalent across demographics. We know from empirical data and research that burnout affects one's health, living standards, and overall well-being. Running on empty, as many of us do, and feeling stuck in an endless cycle to make ends meet, to buy and consume, to live in a constant state of anxiety, stress, and fear, to feel like everything is a struggle or everything is a hurdle, like you never have enough, you can never do enough, and you can never be enough. And these prevailing conditions of lack and scarcity are not just morally crushing, but they keep us in a constant state of flight or fight. So the initial results of my online search seem to relate burnout exclusively to work, with much attention placed on healthcare workers, which is understandable given the past few years. And I suppose in the context that burnout is mainly studied from within the workforce, this makes sense. But I did find it odd that I couldn't find hardly anything about non-professional burnout. For instance, students, stay-at-home family members, elderly people, the unemployed, those who cannot work due to mental or physical health issues are somehow, well, non-existent in this context. Strange, no? Anyway, before I ramble on any further, let's clean over some of the information we are given about burnout. So, Paul, I know we've looked through quite a few articles.
Yes, we have.
I've even sifted through lengthy 40 plus pages of research, and we've narrowed some of these down, mainly to avoid repetition. But if listeners are interested, where can they find the information we're referencing in this episode?
Yes, so we will link articles, any of the articles that we've cited in this show and anything else we find interesting or relevant down in the show's description. We encourage you all to take a look for yourselves.
Great. Thank you for that, Paul. Right. So on that note, what information will you be sharing with us about this topic?
Yes. So I've got a few articles here that we took a look at and we'll be discussing. The first one comes from a Forbes article, which was published on Forbes.com, April 21st of 2021. And the article is titled 11 Signs of Burnout and Ways to Overcome It. So this is an article written by the Forbes Coaches Council, who outline the 11 signs of burnout and give simple advice on how to deal with them and how to, quote, recover your former motivation, unquote. They list them as feeling overworked and stressed, increasing disengagement, chronic anxiety and anger, taking more sick days, disconnection from passion or goals, having an out-of-mind experience, negativity and brain fog, feeling sleepy and unable to concentrate, feeling uninspired, flagging energy or morale, and lastly, feeling constantly overwhelmed. While some of the advice may seem helpful, it doesn't go too far in depth and tends to simplify the signs. In the first example, feeling overworked and stressed, one of the coaches suggests changing your current state by doing 50 jumping jacks or going for daily walks and taking deep breaths. In another one of the examples, in overcoming negativity and brain fog, they suggest spending time doing something that recharges your energy and replenishing it with possible time in nature, a spa day, or unplugging and getting away from technology. Well, these are surely helpful tips and good reminders. They don't seem to go very far into solving the root of a person's issues. It feels a bit like putting a Band-Aid on a broken arm. And hopefully these are things that people already do in their daily lives. Anyhow, solving the overwhelming and feeling of burnout would seem to require a much deeper dive.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sorry to interject here, but I found it.
No,
I find it interesting. Yeah, I just find it interesting that the responses by some of these supposed, you know, coaches, these professional coaches, are really, they're almost childlike in terms of the kind of responses that they're giving, like go and take a walk, do 50 jumping jacks. it's a bit insulting because it seems to avoid like what's really maybe creating the burnout for somebody.
For sure. For sure. And there'll be more to come on this.
I'm sure.
You know, I think most people can relate to some or a lot of these signs. I mean, I've personally felt disconnection from passion or goals in jobs before, just sort of feeling stuck in a rut, a job you don't love, you know, you've got to pay the bills, you know, but you don't know how to move forward, get ahead, get out of this situation. And it can certainly feel overwhelming, be a major deterrent to passion or growth. You know, I'm sure a lot of people can relate to many of these.
Absolutely.
And bringing up what you mentioned earlier, one caveat to consider is that the Coaches Council is a fee-based membership. In which, quote, top business and career coaches from the Forbes Coaches Council offer firsthand insights on leadership and development in careers. Unquote.
Oh, okay. Right.
So they may be dangling a bit of a carrot there. Also, considering the source, Forbes magazine, Forbes.com, the article is written definitely from a corporate perspective, possibly a human resources perspective. And, you know, it makes you wonder if they truly do have the employee's best interests in mind.
Yeah, I would say that's a good point. And also the fact that, you know, ultimately this article is a kind of a nice big marketing for the fee-based membership of the career coaches from, you know, Forbes Council is kind of like,
yes,
we could solve your problem for a mere $3,000 or whatever it is that they're charging. You know?
Right. I think we all have enough fee-based memberships these days anyhow.
I think so. Yeah. So what else do you have for us?
Okay. In our next article, from Wired.com, published on September 27th of 2022. The unlikely cure for burnout, a second job.
Oh, excellent.
Of course. In this article, the author makes a case for doubling down and instead of spending less time at work, getting a second job. This has been defined as overemployed. Quote from the article, overemployed, where employees secretly working more than one full-time job, aided by the rise of remote work ushered in by the COVID-19 pandemic, unquote. Overemployed workers have gathered in online communities and are supporting each other on social media sites like Reddit, where they've got 89,000 plus members in a group.
Wow.
On TikTok, the hashtag overemployed has over 4.3 million views. I'm sure that's much higher now. And in the Discord community, they've got more than 32,000 users, you know, as a resource for each other to give each other advice on how to deal with this. So the article states, quote, though the overemployed at first glance seem to be resisting the backlash against hustle culture by embracing even more work, they echo many talking points about work that have long since entered the mainstream, from disenchantment with corporations to the rejection of jobs monopolizing workers' time and identity, unquote. Hmm. It seems that workers are letting go of some of the traditional ideas of seeking meaning or identity from work, or even the ambitions of rising through the corporate ranks, trading these ideals and instead looking at work as an exchange of services for pay, prioritizing their home and personal lives over being part of a team building or corporate culture experience as a means for identity. While the juggling of two careers seems daunting and unsustainable, many workers see it as a way to financial and personal freedom in an uncertain economy. Some earning as much as 200% of the normal income, offering them opportunities previously thought to be unattainable. Another quote, overemployment embraces the lure of earning additional and steady income from the comfort of your own home while circumventing the precarious side hustles and gig works that fails to meet the needs of many.
Unquote. Of course. Yeah, that's really a good point. But I it's interesting because A, one would read this and assume that these people are going to hit a point of burnout just because mm-hmm. they're overemployed. And then B, it's also making assumption that all of these people have sort of cushy, let's just put it, sort of white collar jobs where they can get to work from home, right, making that amount of money. Because if you are, quote, if you are overemployed, but are working like a job at UPS and say FedEx, I don't know how you're going to, like, you know, have time to eat, let alone, you know, manage your day.
Great points. Yes. So yeah, the article goes on. It touches on another school of thought or movement that is called anti-work, which they define it. they define as the belief that the system is broken and against the workers and therefore should be torn down, whereas the overemployed think the system is broken and should be exploited. Mm. Some feel corporations think in terms of many revenue streams. Why shouldn't workers? Mm-hmm. Another quote, with multiple jobs, the posters say they never quite get attached to any. It's rejection of work as an identity and an embrace of jobs as means to an end. And most have an exit strategy, a financial goal or a number that will see them pack it all in. Overemployment provides a sense of newfound confidence and positivity amid uncertain times, a feeling of taking back power, unquote. While this sounds like an unrealistic schedule to me, perhaps someone maybe not long out of university without many family responsibilities could take on this type of workload in a week. Mm-hmm. Doesn't sound much like much of a life or even healthy, but many see this as a temporary situation while getting out of debt, buying a house, or even starting their own business.
Yeah, I mean, I think those things are probably sustainable. Like you said, it's sort of age related. You have a bit more energy. You know, I know people who've done not necessarily overemployment, but they've got into a job that they know is going to probably suck the life force out of them, and they're willing to commit to it to like 2-3 years before they go on to something else. So they're doing it as a means to make money quick and move on. But again, you know, this is a question of like, how long is that actually attainable? And then right, what happens if the thing that you decide to do next doesn't become feasible because the markets change. Most of the people are looking to go into some kind of entrepreneurship force. So it all depends on what they're doing. And it's an interesting strategy, although I seem to be leaning more with the anti-work people.
Great points. Yes. So, okay. And then I had a third article here, which is from betterup.com. And this was published September 29, 2021. It's called Signs of Burnout at Work and What to Do About It. So the BetterUp article provides a deeper look into burnout. As Nusha previously mentioned, psychologist Herbert Freudenberger came up with this term to describe, quote, the extinction of motive or incentive, especially where one's devotion to a cause or relationship fails to produce the desired result, unquote. The article goes on to characterize job burnout in three main symptoms: lack of motivation, lack of pleasure in your job, and a lack of belief in your ability to complete tasks or a sense of inefficacy. The article also includes a World Health Organization definition, quote unquote, state of vital exhaustion, later adding that it is recognized as an, quote, occupational phenomenon, unquote, that occurs when, quote, chronic workplace stress has not been successfully managed, unquote. They have also provided statistics from a Deloitte survey in 2015 that found 77% of professionals had experienced burnout.
That is astounding. That is astounding when we consider it, because this happens, this is a 2015 survey by Deloitte.
Sure.
And when you have already that level, 77%, saying that they have experienced burnout, and if that doesn't ring the alarm bells.
Right. This is 8 years ago now. So
yeah, and I would assume that, you know, a lot of these definitions that you've just referred to, you know, and these sort of symptoms, lack of motivation, like who of us have not felt that lack of pleasure in our job? I think most of us sadly say we have a lack of pleasure in our job.
Yes.
You know, it's a job. It's not like, you know, it doesn't give you that feeling of fulfillment, and or lack of belief in your ability to complete tasks. Well, I think it's because in many, many jobs, the task or the goalpost for the tasks keep moving and getting more and more and more. So it's keeping on top of things.
Right. So true. So yes, the article goes on to introduce three types of burnout: overload burnout, under-challenge burnout, and neglect burnout.
Mm-hmm.
Goes on, followed by 12 stages of burnout at work and 5 overall stages of burnout: the honeymoon stage, balancing act, chronic stress symptoms, burnout, and finally enmeshment. While we know that high burnout cases have been around for some time, the pandemic has perhaps shown an extra light on the issue or disrupted many regular work routines and made workers re-examine career choices and their overall work-life balance. As we can see, this issue is multi-layered and needs to be looked at from multiple angles. Nusha, I know you'll be referencing this article as well. What are some of the things that stood out to you?
Yeah, well, thank you, Paul. Thanks for that. And thanks for the interesting details that you've ciphered, that you've managed to cipher through these articles. And they certainly do give us a bit of an insight to how the topic about burnout is being framed. And I think that's one thing that I think listeners will also probably key into. How are these things being framed, right? And if we're just taking up from BetterUp, and I think, mind you, I think it's worth noting that the BetterUp as an organization, because it's a professional coaching and consulting firm. And what they do is they work specifically with companies and individuals to, like, you know, improve leadership, improve management. Sort of, they talk about, you know, managing up and creativity within the workforce, etc. So they also have a particular angle, even though I would say that maybe from all of the articles we've reviewed, this is quite a in-depth and a little bit more fine-tuned article about burnout, providing a lot more of a of a diagnostic. They do, which is a little bit different from some of the articles that we have been looking at, is they ask you to do a bit of self-diagnosis with a series of questions. Now, in a way, this does make me laugh because you have questions that many of us would say yes to, regardless of whether we're feeling burnout or not. So these include things like, are you, and I quote, are you having more bad days than good days at work? Do you find yourself unusually low or irritable at the end of the week or weekend? Do you have stomach aches, digestive upset, or pains in your back or neck? I mean, these are sort of funny questions to ask. You know, it goes on. It has about 10 questions. Mm-hmm. And then it says, you know, if you've answered yes to most of these questions, you're likely experiencing job burnout. You know, end quote. And I'm thinking you will probably have the overwhelming population responding yes to at least half of these questions, if not more.
I was raising my hand on several of those. So
yes. I think what's interesting is, you know, the article also looks at the three kinds of diagnostics that are used in terms of assessing burnout. And the most well-known is by Dr. Christina Maslach. And it's known as the Maslach Burnout Inventory, MBI. And this is kind of become sort of a golden standard, if you will, in the burnout inventory or the burnout diagnostic. You'll see that the name Dr. Christina Maslach comes up in several articles that I'm going to be referring to shortly. Yeah, so one of the things that is highlighted here, and I quote, noted burnout researcher Dr. Christina Maslach outlined six organizational factors: workload, control, reward, community, fairness, and values. There isn't an absolute equation for job burnout, so the same risk factor won't necessarily cause burnout for everyone, end quote. So then they go on to discuss this, you know, workload, obviously that should be so self-explanatory. Mm-hmm. But it's also interesting how things again are framed. And again, you know, quote, if you tend towards isolation, people pleasing, or perfectionism, this may make demanding workload feel impossible. And end quote. And the question is, like, how many people have jobs that are, in fact, isolating? Not that that you tend towards isolation, but they create a sense of isolation because you're working in a solitary manner. And I think many people are in environments where they want to please their colleagues, their managers, etc. You have many people who have a tendency towards perfectionism, this will go on overdrive in a work environment where there are lots of demands made on you.
Sure.
Now, so I think those are things, you know, that we would consider. An interesting component is the fact that they also talk about, you know, reward, and you know, obviously, very often we think of this in terms of monetary reward. And this is a huge component. Why a lot of people do feel burnout is because they don't feel like they're being compensated for what they do. And it's interesting what they have to say about that in this article based on the Maslach sort of metric. And again, quote, bonuses and promotions are nice, but opportunities for growth, new challenges and visibility, or simply positive feedback can also help fill their cups, end quote. And of course, they're referring here there to the employees. And I find this interesting because, you know, on the other hand, you've got companies and work environments where, you know, they've initiated this whole sort of thank yous to employees. And these are often brought up in briefs or in meetings, but they can be problematic because management may end up giving recognition to the same set of employees whilst overlooking others. And then alternatively, these thank yous in front of colleagues may end up coming across as sort of contrived or ring hollow or seem kind of like platitudes in lieu of the employee really feeling or believing that they're being appreciated, that they're being recognized for what they do, and that, yes, this is actually being also compensated monetarily. if you are that kind of employee who is, you know, working really constantly and constantly working to improve, and you're not seeing that being compensated or recognized, I think that that would automatically lead to resentment. It may eventually lead to burnout.
Absolutely.
So the article then, of course, goes on. It talks about the fact that it's difficult to attribute burnout just to one cause. And that would seem self-evident, I think, for many of us when we're looking at it more introspectively. And this idea also that if you have a sense of burnout, it's important that you go and speak to a manager or human resource professional. This is sort of the guidance that BetterUp is giving you. Mm-hmm. And again, I find this advice somewhat problematic, because this advice is the kind of thing that where a lot of commentators will state, and particularly in this article, stated that, you know, management and HR are often precisely the problem.
Right. Yes, it also seems like it could lead to making things worse for some people.
Yeah, exactly. And very often, HR is in the business of protecting management or protecting their bottom line, protecting the company from potentially, you know, getting sued or getting a bad reputation, things like that. And, you know, you may have management or a manager who's not interested, who's mm-hmm. simply not interested in your feelings.
I'm sure a lot of people will resonate with that.
Yeah. So, you know, the advice that's given, you know, they're giving you then further on, you know, 10 ways to treat and handle burnout at work. You know, they have advice that is all well and good. And I'm just going to cite a few of these. Pay attention to your feelings. Burnout is inseparable from emotions. And again, I feel like that should be self-evident. Stating things like examine your boundaries. And yes, you know, they say, you know, often a too busy workload is the result of yes to commitments without being present to the work, time, or energy they'll take to complete, end quote. Well, okay. But what if you can't say no?
Right.
Cultivating interests outside of work, all well and good. But if you are burnt out, you do not have time or the energy to cultivate interests outside of work. And that's not to say we shouldn't, but very often we start. How many of us go, oh, I'm starting this course, I'm doing this thing, and then, like, you know, we never maybe see it through because we're too exhausted from our work.
This is true. Yes. Some, you know, sometimes people just need to get home and take care of themselves and rest. And like you mentioned, fight or flight.
Yeah. I think so. I mean, and again, I encourage readers to look at this, listeners to look at this and read it for themselves. In and of itself, there's nothing untoward in these points or the advice that they're giving you. It all makes sense. It seems like sensible, common advice. But I feel that after having read through this, it is still missing some context. And that is, where do we go from that point so that we actually avoid having burnout altogether? Like, is there somewhere else we need to go? Is there something else we need to look at so that burnout is not a thing?
Okay.
Yeah. So this leads me to my next article, which is from the New York Times. It was published in February of 2022, so almost a year ago. And it's called Your Body Knows You're Burned Out. So by Melinda Wenner Moyer.
Okay.
And I initially, when I came across this article, I thought, oh my, okay, great. They're now really going to give, you know, go in depth with the psychology and sort of the physical well-being of burnout. And there is that. But it, again, I think, you know, when one examines this article, it goes into what I call banalities to a certain extent of defining the obvious. And I'll give you an example. And by the way, there's also the Deloitte. They also reference the Deloitte survey that you were looking at previously in the BetterUp article. And it also references, again, Christina Maslach. You know, they say what to look out for what to look out for in burnout. And quote, one common burnout symptom is insomnia. And, you know, physical exhaustion is another common sign. Okay. You know, changes in eating habit, headaches and stomach aches could also be incited by burnout. But then if you look at that, it seems like, well, yeah, but other things can also create insomnia or, you know, physical exhaustion or a change in eating habits. Right. It's like this can fit so many different things. And I think one of the interesting factors is that, again, we're looking at advice that's being given. And they're making reference again to Dr. Christina Maslach. And the article cites, when burnout stems from job-related woes, it may help to request better working conditions. Dr. Maslach suggests brainstorming with coworkers and presenting your employers with ideas that would help, like providing quiet areas for breaks and personal phone calls, creating no meeting days so that employees can have more time to focus, or ensuring that there's always coffee in the break room. End quote.
It's important.
It's important, but I wonder how realistic this is.
This is true.
How realistic is this for most people in the workforce? You know, employees often find that factors such as poor work environments, poor staff management, and or issues with colleagues are at some of the root causes of their burnout. You know, going to management with concern doesn't offer, you know, results, favorable results. And, you know, as said before, more, it can get worse if you bring that issue up with HR.
Right. It seems the real issues, the root of the issues are glossed over and, you know, we're fed anecdotes and simple tips.
And the irony in that they're referring to another psychologist, Dr. Gold, and it states here, ultimately, you want to assure you have some freedom and autonomy in your job. I think that's what we all would like in our work. And the overwhelming majority of us don't actually have that.
Very true.
So it's an interesting article. You know, it one of the things that actually stood out for me, and I think it's going to be something that will dive into a little bit further, hopefully in the next episode. But one thing that I also wanted to highlight is that the aspects of burnout, which I think we can all see have accelerated over the past few years, and they have been so high that they cannot be ignored, have led to, and again, I'm quoting here, have led that more than, you know, in a survey, in a 2021 survey of 1,500 US workers, more than half said they were feeling burnt out as a result of their job demands. And a whopping 4.3 million Americans quit their job in December of 2021 in what has become known as the Great Resignation.
That's right.
And when people think about burnout, mental and emotional symptoms such as feeling helplessness and cynicism often come to mind. But, you know, burnout can lead to a whole host of physical symptoms as well. And I'm stuck on that 4.3 million Americans quitting their jobs just in the month of December 2021 alone. Now, we can look at that and go, oh, the pandemic. But I think that it's not just the pandemic. I feel like the pandemic was like the accelerator.
I agree.
The accelerator for that.
Yeah, and that's an astounding number, really.
It's an astounding number. And especially, you know, when you consider that's like, started. That's a catalyst, and it's been going on since then.
My goodness.
It's been going on since then. The very last bit of thing that I kind of wanted to reference, that I wanted to sort of go to, is a study that actually goes back to 2018. So this goes pre-pandemic. And this was a study that was done for Eurofound, for those that don't know. And don't worry, I didn't know either until I came across the study. So Eurofound is actually a part of the EU sort of areas of study. And the article or the research is called Burnout in the Workplace, a Review of Data and Policy Responses in the EU. So it's through the Publication Office of the EU in Luxembourg. So again, this was published in 2018. And what's interesting here is they're looking at all of the different factors of burnout across European countries, and also going as far back as sort of the mid-90s or early 90s even, for when this phenomenon really kind of gave rise at a level that could no longer be ignored, let's put it that way. And one of the things is that I found interesting in this article is that, you know, they're looking at how each country defines burnout, because it goes past just being sort of, you know, a workplace phenomenon or a workplace stressor, but also looking at, could this be a way to define these, you know, levels of exhaustion of what it is that needs to change within the work environment, or what can be done to mitigate it?
Just in sheer numbers alone, it seems as if it's something that should be taken more seriously.
Exactly, exactly. And one of the interesting finds from this research is that in all of the EU, so in all of the EU countries, burnout has been classified as an occupational disease to date, namely in Italy and Latvia. So only two countries, Italy and Latvia, define this as a occupational disease. And why is this kind of significant? When you go from a phenomenon or a state of extreme exhaustion to something being recognized as an occupational disease, there is a sense of obligation on behalf of employers or companies to then consider financial compensation and or time for these people who do experience burnout to have the support that they need, and to also ensure that burnout is prevented or mitigated.
That sounds at least good.
Yes, in theory. Well, whether it happens is an entirely different matter. But it's an interesting study. The other thing that I found interesting, because it's one of the few places that I was able to find this information, is there a correlation between burnout, mental depression, and anxiety? So the idea is, because there have been so many different studies throughout Europe, the idea is, you know, are people who already suffer from, you know, mental depression and anxiety more likely to get burnout, or does burnout lead subsequently to a state of depression and anxiety? And the interesting thing is, it's kind of both. So
yeah.
The fact there are factors that people who do have depression and anxiety are more likely to get job burnout. But equally, those who don't have pre-existing conditions of, you know, depression and anxiety may end up, as a result of feeling burnt out and, you know, totally depleted, may end up with a form of depression. It may just be a mild or temporary depression and or anxiety. So it's interesting that it isn't just like a trajectory of, well, if you've got depression and anxiety, we know that you're more likely at risk of burnout. Well, they've also done studies to show that people who didn't have those things are going to suffer from that inevitably.
That's fascinating. So it seems to be a case of nature and nurture in a sense.
Yeah. So they're looking at both biological markers, you know, they refer to this as biological markers in terms of depression versus, you know, this aspect of, because of the stress factors, you know, and you have obviously elevated levels of cortisol from these stress factors, that people that have what they refer to, and again, quote, clinical and non-clinical burnout.
Okay.
You know, that's what they're defining it. That's what they're defining it as. And it's very interesting. So, and then, you know, I there's loads of graphs. I'm not going to waste people's time with that. But there's loads of graphs, and there's a lot of information going from everything from, you know, social networks, personal social networks, the lack thereof, the conflicts in the workplace, the sense of autonomy,
the sense of, you know, what teamwork actually means versus what we always sort of define it to mean, and personal as well as professional development, all being factors in regards to burnout. But interestingly, they too also reference Dr. Christina Maslach's inventory for burnout. So they're still all working on certain gold standards.
Okay. Yeah. Well, that's fascinating. That's a lot of great information.
It's a boatload of information. And I think that's one of the things. We've got so much information.
Mm-hmm.
Yet I still feel like there are things missing. I still feel like there are things that are not really answered. So
agreed.
One of the things, yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, no, I was just absolutely. You've sort of begun to highlight a lot of these things. And like you mentioned before, it really is worth the deeper dive.
Yeah, that's what we're here to do, the deeper dive. So, I mean, I think one of the things that I'm looking at generally when I'm looking at this article, but not just this article. I mean, if somebody wants to go and scroll through the interwebs and you'll come up with, for example, a 2016 article from the Harvard Business Review about beating burnout, or you go to the BMJ, which is the British Medical Journal, you'll see tons of research and articles that you can read, even if it's just an abstract, about burnout. Go to the Mayo Clinic, and the Mayo Clinic, which asks you some of the most banal questions, like, are you feeling constantly tired? You know, like if you answer yes to one or more of these questions, you know, you might be experiencing job burnout. So when you go to all of these sources and are reading through them, I mean, I think one of the questions is, okay, who are, you know, how are these narratives framed? The other mm-hmm. question is, who are these articles and sources geared for?
Sure.
If from the articles that you've looked at, who are these articles and sources you think geared for?
Well, I think the, you know, people like ourselves who have gone through these challenges may start to look, but as we find whose best interest is here, a lot of this is anecdotal, sort of helpful tips that don't really address the root of many issues.
Yes, that's definitely there. I think the other thing is, at least for me, that pops up is that most of these articles are cited through financial or business news outlets, or they are, you know, or, you know, in sections of business. For example, the NYT article is in the business section, right, that I was citing. And it's the focus is not just on professional outlet, but the effect that this has on the marketplace and economy. So more focus is there than mm-hmm. what the impact is socially. How does this impact us as a society, as individuals? You know, we're looking at symptoms. This to me is reflective of something much broader in our global psyche. We don't want to get to the root causes of things. Mm. We want to find short-term solutions and workarounds.
Right.
That's why you get the coaches giving you the 50 jumping jacks?
50 jumping jacks, yes. 50 jumping yep. jacks and take a walk.
And that is going to solve all of your problems. You know.
There you go. Well, it would seem that, you know, you were posing the question there, who are these articles for? And it would seem that workers, employees feeling this are actually getting more support through their social networks online from each other.
Yeah.
You know, people going through similar things, people thinking outside the box and looking at things in a different way. So that's a great point. And, you know, who are these articles for? And considering the source is very important.
Yeah. I think the other thing that I find that is there, and going back to the fact, you know, there's less depth and content about the root causes, which I mentioned previously. And, you know, things that I think could be added if there was a little bit more imagination, like what about being daring and saying maybe we should look at shorter working weeks, a better mm-hmm. work-life balance, you know, ensuring that employers and ensuring that the economic structures recognize the importance of better work-life balance.
That's right.
You know, we're looking at What about sort of like looking at things a little bit more honestly, you know, meaningful changes in business practices, particularly in big corporations where, you know, the supposed quote unquote trickle down effect really just implies that it trickles down to the upper management.
It only trickles down so far.
It only trickles down so far, if at all, right?
Yes.
You know, there's no mention of like better financial compensation, better benefits, especially in sectors where we most rely on people and services. That part of the discussion is not made. The other thing is that almost all of the articles seem to focus on, so we're talking about, you know, sort of white collar professionals or people in the healthcare industries. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but we're assuming that it's just the execs and, you know, middle management or people in sort of, you know, white collar professions or people in the healthcare industries that are feeling the brunt, that are feeling the burnout. And not, you know, it seems odd that there isn't a little bit more depth and consideration about other areas, both professionally and non. So that's where I'm going. Who is it geared for? You know, how are these narratives being framed?
I see. That's a really good question you're posing, and definitely requires a lot of thought.
Yeah.
And further discussion.
Further discussion. Yeah, I mean, we could be discussing this until the cows come home.
you know,
the other thing that I find is, the other question I have is, okay, what's missing here? And for me, the thing that sticks out is, okay, there's all this research being done. You know, I've just cited like a 40 plus page research through Eurofound. And, you know, this is supposed to be like, you know, one of those private public partnership research things. And what is missing is, yes, you have a lot of statistics, but what you don't have is sort of independent oversight or public feedback. In other words, there isn't enough qualitative data except for surveys. And again, this doesn't seem to include broader sense of demographics. So when you're looking at the data, you're going to go to, you know, if you've got a Deloitte, if you've got a, you know, if you've got some other agency, they are going to be specifically in healthcare. They're going to be specifically in corporations. And this doesn't mean that we're not getting important information, but it does feel incomplete. And it feels that a lot of things are being addressed peripherally within the current economic context.
Yes, it would seem to certainly leave a lot to be desired.
Right. Yeah. And then the other thing is, and, you know, going back to the fact that this is going to execs and managers and you know, people in sort of more white collar categories, I also feel like there's a lack of acknowledgement, you know, in addition to the sort of a general lack of an acknowledgement for people who have other roles and responsibilities within the workforce, there's also sort of little consideration given to external and daily factors which actually impact burnout. So when we're all discussing this from the side of professional burnout, what's not considered is, how is somebody's daily commute? You've got people who have a 2-hour daily commute to and from work. That is exhausting.
It's insane.
It's insane. You have, you know, physical workspace and environment. So if you're going into a really sort of gray or really, you know, like deadened space, that is going to impact you. That's going to impact your sense of, you know, your sense of productivity. It's going to impact your well-being. Those things over time impacts a person. Relentless work schedule, excessive productivity monitoring. A lot of people experienced, you know, especially during the pandemic, when they went from in office to home office, they suddenly had these monitors attached where, like, it just became like Big Brother all the time. They were afraid to get up and have a wee, you know, because they felt like every keystroke was being monitored. You have also poor pay and really poor contracts. You know, in the UK, there's the 0-hour work contracts, which actually binds an individual to a company, even if they have no hours in a particular week, which means that it makes it difficult for them they might have a second job, but that second job is not enough because that's also part-time. And they can't get a third job because they're beholden to these zero-hour contracts. You know,
it's madness.
It's absolute madness.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, dear.
And then I think the other thing is when we look at the solutions for burnout, and that's another thing that I find sort of worth looking at. When we're looking at solutions for burnout, they're almost all repetitive. You kind of see the nearly the same set of advice across resources. And it doesn't mean that the advice is bad. It's not bad, but it's banal. It kind of comes across as superficial or sort of reductionistic.
Yeah, incomplete.
Incomplete, exactly. And, you know, it kind of stood out for me when I was reading the New York Times article, but actually when I was reading most of these articles, I love to kind of go to the comment section and look at what people are saying. Because, you know, the people will speak up, you know, and it's, and you can, you know, you can agree with people's comments, you can disagree with people's comments, but sometimes there's always that one individual who seems to nail what is missing.
Mm.
And for me, this one individual, their name was not given, just their initials. This individual wrote in regards to the New York Times article. And they wrote, any discussion of burnout that does not put the responsibility for change where it belongs with the ruling money class is not worth the time. By all means, provide tips for those resources, but for those hanging on by the tips of their fingernails to just survive, chronic stress is a fact of life. The changes must be made at the top to prioritize people over profit. Until we do that, nothing will change, end quote. And I think that that person has nailed it.
Excellent. It really does hit the nail on the head, especially in a comments section. Those are wild places.
Yes, exactly. I think when we're looking at all of this, you know, this is kind of the culmination of it. Everybody circles around the issue rather than really kind of getting at the heart of it.
Good point.
So these are just a few, but certainly not an exhaustive set of resources that you can find online. And indeed, I would encourage everyone to look at what is available and do their own research.
Critical analysis and independent thinking are key to developing and broadening your own understanding and perspectives. And in an age where some news outlets are rather blatantly telling you not to think for yourself, we encourage you to ignore that ill advice, to explore and hear different sides, get out of your comfort zone, and learn more. I'll be adding my final thoughts, so please stick around, and we'll be back in 2 Shakes of a Lamb's Tail.
Welcome back.
As I implied in part one of this episode, I feel that the omission or lacking of information are bigger clues to what is needed to properly address burnout, that this is much greater than any of the solutions presented within the mainstream or established research in Western society. With a bit of introspection, I would posit that this goes much deeper on a social, personal, and even cellular level. I would also posit once again that high levels of burnout have been going on for decades, but have been given far more attention in the media and in studies simply because the problem is just too big to ignore. And perhaps if we look more expansively and robustly of what would be required, then it's not just that we need to acknowledge and identify symptoms of burnout, but consider that our global dysfunction and values are misaligned with what most of us would like to see, namely a fairer, kinder, more compassionate, localized, yet internationally cooperative world and work environment. Because what is truly needed are systemic changes rather than the plaster-like solutions we've been given. And these changes, despite what many might hope or strive for cannot come from the top down. It cannot come from the very entities, individuals, organizations, and corporations which have done nothing to contribute to our well-being, and indeed can be seen as integral in having worsened our situation. When we disconnect the problems within so many work environments, the mentality, the ethos, or lack thereof, and when we peel back more of the layers and see that there are many, and in fact, larger interconnecting parts that are things that actually propel burnout, this inevitably must spur the need for individual and collective paradigm shifts. As the spiritual philosopher Krishnamurti stated, it is no measure of good health to be well adjusted to a profoundly sick society. I would add that because of all the imbalance we have in this world, because we're still running on outdated models of work, and because we're presented with ideas of success that aren't reflective of how most people live their day-to-day reality, because for many, there is no such thing as a work-life balance, and because even if it's desired, the current conditions and the systems we're plugged into make this impossible. Because we have been encouraged, cajoled, and conditioned into such hyper-consumerism where everything needs to be fast, faster, and on demand. And because everything from our infrastructure to our politicians are no longer fit for purpose. And because underneath it all, most of us are yearning for a different way of living. When considering all the aforementioned, knowing that it's not just you, me, but perhaps a little bit of everyone we know, that we're all feeling burnt out, life tired, as a good friend of mine so aptly put it, then it should be clear that burnout is a message. It's a message of enough to our bodies, minds, consciousness, and spirit. And this begins with us, not waiting for Godot, in other words, waiting for something out there to rescue us. As more and more of us are drawing to something different, something better, more real, more connected, as more of us are willing to be introspective and do some soul-searching, however you wish to see this term, perhaps we can recalibrate what's really important for ourselves, for our higher good, and in doing so, be part of a growing collective that can make the much-needed paradigm shift actually happen. If millions of people are burnt out and are saying, I'm done with this work situation, imagine what happens when many more millions, even billions, follow suit. We could write a whole new book on a far more ethical, balanced, and rewarding way of living and working. And writing this chapter first requires us to look inwards, to be willing to let go of that which no longer serves us or our higher good. And it will take a bit of patience, persistence, and importantly, connection, community. The thing is, friends, burnout can be a gift if we truly listen to what it's telling us. Before we wrap things up, Paul, what's coming up next time?
Well, in relationship to our first topic, we'll look into toxic work environments, as well as the consequences that this has had and continues to have in employment, especially in regards to deliberate choices countless people are making in response to these work environments. We'll assess how toxic workplaces are being framed in media outlets and business journals, and consider what is being glossed over and why.
We'll also look into the phenomenon of bullshit jobs and the values our society currently ascribes to work, how certain roles are unjustly far more monetarily rewarded over others, the collective cultural fixation with busyness, and the void that this actually creates to our personal growth and self-worth. And we'll consider how we relate to work and discuss ways in which we can collectively and independently shift from our current work-obsessed paradigm towards something more holistic, balanced, and meaningful. On that note, we thank you so much for listening. We hope this episode has struck a chord and maybe it has been thought-provoking enough for you to have your own quantum conversations. Until next time, keep those wheels of thought churning. And Godspeed.